What's that word?
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever. You can say it both ways.
I think it's indicates.
Indicative? Is that the word you were looking
that
for?
That is a good word, Kristen Bright.
A friend wouldn't make fun of somebody like for knowing a word. See, this is what I'm talking about, people. Kristen Bright does not believe in friendship.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin, the 11 o'clock hour on this very smoky Tuesday. Please don't go outside if you don't have to. Dan Schaefer, he's like, well, how are you dealing with this? And I was like, oh, because I'm pregnant and maybe should be wearing a mask if I'm going to be outside, so maybe I should.
Oh, I guess he wasn't asking me.
Oh.
Whatever.
But yeah, take care of yourself because it's hard to see the sun today, and that is because of the air quality happening from the fires. But that is not stopping us from doing a show today, and I am very excited to talk to our next guest, who has been on the show before. But Phoebe Petrovic is an investigative reporter at Wisconsin Watch, who focuses on the threats to democracy and civic equality for women and LGBTQ people. And her recent series throughout May was on voucher schools. And we talked a little bit about it, I think last month or the beginning of this month, basically asking, you know, are you comfortable with your tax dollars going to private schools that can legally discriminate against some kids? And that was what the four different articles highlighted. And so I'm so excited to talk to you about this, Phoebe, because this was quite the undertaking. And I guess, is that the simplest way to sum it all up? Is basically that these schools can take public money and then are just not held to the same standards as the public schools are?
Yeah, that is absolutely what it is. These are private schools that take public funds and are held to standards that are entirely different and are allowed to treat LGBTQ plus and disabled students in ways, manners that would be illegal for a public school to treat them.
So if we back up a little bit, start at the top. What should parents know? Like when we talk about the voucher school program, is it all private schools, all religious schools, just charters, like charter schools? Like, because I know it's a complex web when you get outside of just the public schools and then how the public money intersects with schools that accept vouchers. And so what is the range of schools that we're talking about when we talk about voucher schools in general?
Yeah, so to break it down, so you often will hear these referred to as choice schools or school choice, but that is really a broad term that includes things like charter schools or open enrollment for public schools. So we chose voucher schools as the term because that is really specific. So a voucher school is a private school that receives some amount of public money through tuition vouchers to accept students whose families have a certain level of income. So these are private schools that is elected to participate in a program that takes public money. Charter schools are public, so that's separate.
Okay.
And voucher schools have to sort of apply to be part of the program. There's 373 voucher schools in Wisconsin, which means schools that are participating in this program. There are four voucher programs in Wisconsin. Some are only for Milwaukee, some are only for Racine. There's also the Wisconsin sort of statewide voucher program. And then there's also the special needs scholarship program, which is specifically for students with disabilities. And I did a calculation because DPI doesn't keep this for some reason, but 95% of the schools participating in voucher programs this year are religious. So 95% of voucher schools are religious.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. So it is very much almost entirely religious schools participating in the voucher program.
Well, and what's really interesting to me is that so Wisconsin is the birthplace of the voucher school movement in the U.S., and when it was first enacted here in the 90s, it was a very limited experimental program in Milwaukee, and it was limited to secular schools. Initially, it was specifically not allowed to include private religious schools. And of course, as the program has expanded, and particularly the GOP has sort of pushed its expansion and wider adoption, they've removed some of those requirements. Some of the other requirements were that you had to have attended public schools before you tried to go for vouchers. But now there are tons of voucher students who have never set foot in a public school. They've only ever been taking vouchers to attend private schools. So limitations like that have gone away as the program has expanded. One of the big ones being that now religious schools can participate and overwhelmingly dominate the space.
And so then how much choice do parents have? So if you're going to choose, like you said, there is choice schools, which are public. There's a voucher program that you can go to private schools. Is it a lottery system, or is it like I qualify for a voucher and I have done my research and this is the voucher school I want to send my kid to? Or are you kind of funneled into something where this is your option?
Yeah, so I don't know I can't speak to the specific intricacies of the different programs because I know that it varies depending on the program. But basically what it is the law sets out really specific requirements for eligibility. So it's like age, your attendance in the previous year, how much income your family makes. And that varies depending on the program. So like what percentage of the poverty line are you? And then residency. And so in some of the programs, then you apply and the school basically has to take you if they have the seats. In perhaps the Wisconsin statewide program, that's the one where it's always just a random lottery to see who gets a spot in whatever school. And then in others, like if there are more voucher students than there are seats for, or potential voucher students than there are seats for, they'll have to be a random drawing to see who gets a seat. But you ultimately can, you know, you can try to request the school of your choice. It just depends on whether or not they will accept you based on, you know, whether you're eligible and then whether there are sufficient requirements or sufficient seats. The thing that you've mentioned, like how much choice do parents have? You know, you can choose to try to attend the school that you want your child to attend. You know, that's sort of in the same way that you can sort of apply to any college that you want. And it's a matter of whether they'll take you. The difference is this comes up, especially for disabled students, is that, you know, one of the advocates that I spoke to was like, you think that you as a parent have the choice, but when you attend a school that's a private voucher school where you have waived your federal protections to attend this school, if there's some problem or conflict, they might, you know, ultimately just kick you out and then you don't have a lot of recourse. And that's where this like question of choice comes in.
Yeah. And that's why I was kind of setting that up. We're talking to Phoebe Petrovic, who is a investigative reporter at Wisconsin Watch, and talking about her series of kind of uncovering, because it is the law, but as far as the leeway that some of these voucher schools are taking to have discriminatory policies against both LGBTQ students and students with disabilities, and it's legal because they don't have to follow the same protections that publicly funded schools do, despite the fact that they're taking public funds. And so, and I asked the question as far as how much choice you have, because if it's kind of a lottery system and you're kind of set up to feel like, well, we're lucky that we got in, and then you're faced with your young child who goes through puberty, comes out, transitions, and all of a sudden you're faced with a different reality. And so can you talk more about, at least let's start with the LGBTQ discrimination that you found in reporting this?
Yeah, so this really ran the gamut. So I looked at, for context, I looked at a third of the voucher schools in Wisconsin. I would have liked to have looked at all of them, but I didn't have time.
Yeah.
And we found that nearly half of them, 4 out of 10, had policies or statements that were discriminatory towards LGBTQ students. Every single one of these was Christian, mostly Lutheran and Catholic, but some other denominations. And all of them cited religious principles for their LGBTQ discrimination. Some of these were a simple statement of faith that would say things like there are only 2 God-given immutable genders and it's a sin to be gay or trans. And then that was it. They didn't have anything sort of codified in policy about how they would like enact those statements of belief. And then some were really explicit saying we will discipline you or we might expel you for being gay or trans. Others said that they refused to use a pronoun or chosen name of a transgender student, or they would deny them access to transition-related medication or to facilities that aligned with their gender identity. And I also found a couple of select instances where schools had sort of additional voucher admissions policies that were explicitly anti-LGBTQ when it came to voucher students, which that appears to be illegal. The important thing is that, you know, you're not allowed under Wisconsin state law to discriminate against LGBTQ students or disabled students in admissions. But once a student is enrolled, CPI says school policies apply. And so it's perfectly legal to say, you're trans, we don't agree with that, you need to leave.
Phoebe, I had a question for you really quick. If I heard somewhere from friends who are, you know, in the same, are teachers, if they accept a kid into the school and they take the money and they say, well, you are trans or you are gay and that's against our policies, we are kicking you out, they get to keep all of that money, correct?
For that semester,
yeah.
Basically, if they've already received the money. So the way that it works is that you basically get I think it's four payments a year. The voucher students or the voucher schools get four payments a year, but it's based off of the headcount of voucher students from the beginning of the first semester and the beginning of the second semester. So theoretically, if someone is kept for that headcount, which determines the money that the school will get for that semester, and then they're kicked out afterwards from, like, I don't want to misstate about when the payment is offered, but, like, theoretically for a couple of months in that semester, that school gets to keep the money and the kid is gone. And then it takes a while for the public school to then get that money back.
So then separately, I want to address this quickly because we only have 2 minutes before we go to the break and then we can talk about it more on the other side. But with children who have disabilities, it's obviously not a religious argument or statement that they're saying why this is what our handbook is. It's more of an accommodation thing where they just basically say, we can't accommodate this student and that's it.
Yeah, broadly, the laws only require minor adjustments to meet disabled students' needs. And so if the school says, you know, this requires more than minor adjustments, they legally don't have the obligation to take those students. And so this often comes down to accommodation or capacity, or they'll say, look, we're a small school. We've got 30 kids. Like, what are we supposed to do?
Got it. All right. Well, I want to talk more about this, how prevalent it is. It's one thing that they can do it. How often are they doing it? Our guest is Phoebe Petrovic, who is an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch. We're talking about voucher schools. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. We got Greg Bach with the good tunes on the board today, and we are talking to Phoebe Petrovic, who is an investigative reporter at Wisconsin Watch, about her series from May, diving into voucher schools, which take public funds and then can legally discriminate against LGBTQ kids and even kids with disabilities. And that on its face does not seem fair or good considering the standards that we hold public schools too, but Phoebe, there's one thing that they can do it. How often is this actually happening? Because I know in your story, you highlighted a couple stories where it did happen, but like, did you come across many stories of people who were actually expelled or threatened with expulsion?
Yeah, so I guess the short answer is we don't know, because I think a lot of these, you know, if this happens to students, they might suffer in silence. So one of the, and it depends on whether your family is supportive of you. I will say in the disability side, a Disability Rights Wisconsin advocate said that she regularly fields calls from parents saying, my kid with disabilities is in the school, they say that they can't accommodate them, or that, you know, that there's an issue with their behavior and they're trying to kick us out, what's our recourse? And, you know, often the advocate has to say nothing, unfortunately, because you waived all of your affirmative, or you waived most of your robust affirmative protections when you left the public school system for one of these voucher programs. On the LGBTQ side, you know, I spoke with someone who was closeted and gay in his all through high school and wanted to come out in his valedictorian speech. His name is Nat Worth. And, you know, he talked about he experienced things while he was an enrolled student and didn't come out and, you know, sort of suffered in silence because it wouldn't have been safe for him. Or he wanted to make sure, you know, that he came out after he was 18 and was able to, you know, legally refuse conversion therapy if that's something that people tried to push on him. So, you know, it's really, we don't quite know. I did receive, you know, a couple of dozen complaints from the disability side and the LGBTQ side that DPI received, where people would write to DPI and mm-hmm. say, hey, this is happening. This feels like discrimination. Can you do something? And they would have to say, I'm sorry, we can't, because these are enrolled students and we have no authority to protect enrolled students who are LGBTQ or disabled from discrimination.
What's wild to me is that your stories were dropping basically around the same time as we've now extended and increased funding for voucher schools. And so I guess in general, or I guess on the good and the bad, what has the reaction been since the different stories came out in May?
Yeah. And that was totally an accident. Like it meant that they were more kind of news. They were relevant, but we've been working on this for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I know. I wouldn't mean that they were causal, but it's like, I feel like my perception was like these dropped, which felt to me like a big deal, and then to like have the follow-up be, but they're getting more money. I was like, oh man, that sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I can say that we got pushback from people in the school choice movement even before the stories published, when they had just heard about our reporting really early on. And I think this is borne out by the way that people have responded. The stories seem to really anger this network of right-wing think tanks and law firms in Wisconsin that have invested significant money in vouchers. So they seem to be very upset, you know, and now the state, Governor Evers has signed this sort of funding boost and they're calling it a win. So, you know, on that side, folks were really angry, but, you know, our position was, this is important information that people need to know about. I don't think a lot of people understand that this is what the voucher program entails, and this is what our taxpayer dollars are funding. And we should consider all aspects of the program when we consider whether or not we want to fund it, to continue funding it or to fund it more. I got some really heartfelt notes from students at some of these schools who said basically, like, thank you for seeing me and speaking to what I'm experiencing. One of those is really interesting. It was actually someone who had graduated from a school I featured in the 70s and said, I was a closeted lesbian at my time there. It was really hard. I'm sad to see that the school hasn't changed, but please pass along to these students that I'm so proud of them. And like, it does get better. And got some interesting notes too from students at some of the schools I featured saying, well, we have freedom of speech and we have freedom of religion, so we can do what we want. And, you know, our response to that was like, yeah, our story is simply saying, you know, focusing on private schools that get public funding and how we as taxpayers are subsidizing treatment that would be illegal in the public school context. So we didn't touch, you know, private schools that are entirely private and independent in what they do. This was public subsidization. So it really sort of ran the gamut, I would say.
And do you feel like it can potentially be the starting point of any momentum of people who want to look at this further and see what more protections, or as far as who qualifies, or kind of taking it to the logical next step for people who are upset that your money would go to a school that doesn't have to follow the same protections as public schools? Is there, have you heard any rumblings of people having inspiration from that to kind of challenge the status quo?
I mean, I certainly saw several Democratic lawmakers who seemed pretty riled up about it. You know, but I think probably this comes down to, like many things in Wisconsin, that we have an extraordinarily gerrymandered legislature. Yeah. And yeah, you know, the side that is perhaps against this doesn't have the votes right now. I will say, you know, I've spoken to advocates who say this discrimination is a feature and not a bug of the voucher system. And it's also something that the legislature has been confronted with several times in the past. There were three bills that would have
unfortunately, Phoebe, I got to cut you off because we have 10 seconds till the break.
Oh,
but
sorry.
Phoebe Petrovic, thank you so much for writing this. Thank you for spending time. I can't wait to have you back and see what you work on next. You are a wonderful reporter.
Everybody can have a special dream. A little time for imagining who you might want to be.
Who can you be?
My grandpa says everybody can have a special place. So let's dream together. Wish together and be someone new today. I wanna be a mermaid with golden hair riding dolphins to the shore. I wanna be a rainbow fish that swims and
welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board today. Greg, what do you think is more coveted by children when it comes to the fantasy creatures of a unicorn versus a mermaid?
Oh my good gravy.
I know with my niece, it's pretty even.
I mean, I would say I'd probably, because, I'd probably want to be a mermaid because I love swimming.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could see you as a merman.
I love a strong merman.
Well, I ask because, did you know that you can see mermaids?
What?
You can actually see mermaids and go see them, like, at the Discovery World Aquarium. In fact, you can see our next guest sometimes at the Discovery World Aquarium. Mermaid Echo, also known as Echo. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm so good. I have heard basically every mermaid-related song in the world, and Greg, I have not heard that one, so
yes.
I'm impressed.
I'm not kidding you. Like, I looked mermaid songs, and it was basically The Little Mermaid entirely.
Yep. There you go.
Yep. So, well done. That was a fun song.
Echo is an internationally award-winning educator and entertainer who's been running Mermaid Echo Entertainment since 2016. And this is an audio medium. So it's hard because we met at a TikTok like local thing in Milwaukee. I started following your account and seeing the transformation you, Echo, go into being Mermaid Echo. You look like a cartoon almost, and like the makeup you put on and what you can do underwater between your movement and how you hold your breath and everything. It's such a transformation. But I guess, how would you describe to someone who is listening right now what it is you do as a mermaid entertainer?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So if you can imagine a giant tail that is purple and teal with sparkly, sparkly, shining scales all over it, that's her tail. It also features like a big, bright white swirl around the ankles, which kind of is a callback to how I got started way back in 2012. I had ankle surgery and I started mermaiding to kind of recover from that injury. So that's what the swirl represents. She wears purple seashells just like Ariel and has beautiful, dusty lavender purple hair with all kinds of shells and crowns and, you know, flowers and starfish stuck in her hair. So that's what she looks like. And she also has big, bright lashes and bright purple lips. And underwater, what we do is promote aquatic conservation through games and trivia questions. And we try to engage kids with the mermaid through aquatic conservation. So it's a really fun time. And they always walk away learning something, I hope. But also, it's just really magical to watch a mermaid swimming underwater.
Absolutely. And so you kind of alluded to it just now. So you had an ankle surgery, but because until I met you, I didn't know that people could just do this and like you like have your job, because you're part educator and activist, but also part entertainer, and you've found a way to blend the two. And how did you even stumble upon this as like something you could do?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, we call it edutainment, education and entertainment all in one. So way back when, I was scrolling through the interwebs and I found a website called the Mer Network, and I describe it as Facebook, but for merfolk. And I came across Hannah Mermaid, who was one of the OG mermaids out there, and she was using her tail to promote aquatic conservation. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is perfect for kids. And so I found another mermaid named Mermaid Raina, who was selling some books on how to get started. So I bought all of her books. I watched all of her YouTube tutorials, and the next summer I launched the business at 17 years old, and every weekend my calendar was booked up. So I haven't had time to breathe since then, like stop and pause, because it's so popular and people don't know about it, which surprises me because everyone loves mermaids. Everyone loves is so on board with this. So I'm so glad that now it's becoming more and more popular.
And so what is the gamut of activities that you do as Mermaid Echo? Because it's like, it's everything from small private events and parties to, like I said, you've performed at Discovery World.
Yes. Yep. I like to say every event is better with a mermaid. If you can dream it, I can do it. So I've done everything from, I've been a clue in an amazing race once. That was crazy. I like gave the clue.
Really?
I've also,
that was one of my weirder gigs. Where were you when they had to come find you to get the clue? And how long did you have to hang out for all of the different contestants to find you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was sitting underneath the Stone Arch Bridge in Minneapolis. This was like one of my first gigs. And I was like, oh, I guess this is my future, is just weird, strange jobs because I need money, you know? So I said, yes, of course. And I hung out under the Stone Arch Bridge. We hung around for maybe 3 hours, and the contestants they did not care about the mermaid. They were like, just give me the clue. Like, we got to go. And that was the first and only time I've ever had that experience in costume, is people not caring that they were meeting a mermaid. It was very strange for a first gig.
So then, but beyond random reality TV shows, what else have you, like, what else does this usually include?
I've done weddings. I do a lot of like brand promotion for all kinds of different products, like hair care, skin care. Rum is a popular one that people reach out to me about, which is fun. I did a goth prom once, with the theme was Under the Sea, an adult goth prom in Madison. That was fun.
Okay.
It was a live photo opportunity. But my favorite events are, of course, conservation education focused gigs. So, and especially the aquarium shows are, that's my big, big passion right now. And I always try to tie in conservation into every event I do.
And I think I highly recommend following Echo on social media and seeing what it is Mermaid Echoes is she, but she does when she's underwater, in that watching you, because you, it's not just you're in a pool at a kid's birthday party. You are in the aquarium, and there is, I think, probably one of your videos on TikTok that has the most views is when one of the fish just like
Carl,
just decided to come say hi and was like kind of in the wig and like up in your face, and you slightly, like, lightly give him a little pet and send him on his way.
Yes.
I would freak out if a fish was in my face. And so what kind of training does it take to be able to hold your breath like that, stay cool under pressure? There's another video that you have when you are working with, like, what looks like a bubble, but I think it's like a glass ball. And so how do you get to this point to be able to be this much of a professional in the way that you perform? And because it's truly, you should follow, it's at Mermaid Echo, right?
Yeah. At Mermaid Echo. Yeah. Oh, you're so sweet.
I'm serious.
I'm looking at the website
right now.
So much
smoke in my head. I don't need any more ego, do I? So very kind of you. My head's already pretty big. No, but you're right. It does take a lot of training. And that's the biggest part of my job as a Patty Mermaid instructor trainer, is teaching folks how they can do this safely and respectfully and responsibly underwater. Because when you're holding your breath at length, at depth, you are endangering your livelihood and also the livelihood of all of the coworkers you're in the tank with. And yes, I call my Fish, my coworkers. They are my best friends and wonderful, wonderful colleagues to have. And that was Carl. Carl has what are called barbels. He is a lake sturgeon. And so he has barbels, which are little whiskers that stick out of his mouth. And that will tell him when there's something near him that he can eat. And then he'll shoot his detachable jaw down and suck up whatever it is. So he had felt a portion of my wig brush against one of his barbels, and he thought it was a piece of food. So he gave me a real big smooch on the head, and it felt a little bit like a punch in the head. They're very strong creatures.
Okay.
I mean, this guy's about 4 foot long, you know, but they don't have teeth, completely harmless. And Carl is my best friend. He is so lovely. He actually was given to the aquarium for rehabilitation because he was kept by someone who kept him in too small of a tank. And you can recognize him because he has little stunted side fins. So you can know who Carl is. And he is the most friendly and the kindest and comes up to me every show. Every single one of them has personality. A lot of people think fish are, you know, brainless, the 2 second memories. That's not true at all. Fish are sentient. Sturgeon are just like little puppies. You know, they have about the same attention span and brain ability as a dog or a pet, maybe a dumb dog, maybe. But yeah.
I've met some of those. It's still lovable.
Well, maybe like a terrier. No, I'm kidding. I love terriers.
Shots fired.
Ooh. Yeah. Fish are my creatures, not dogs. But so I do use a contact juggling ball. It's made of acrylic, not glass. We don't take glass in the aquarium. It's just a lot of training, a lot of practice, and most importantly, learning from the pros. So I sit down with the aquarist a lot and I go, hey, you know, what do I need to know? What equipment can I use in the tank? What can I not do? What is safe? What isn't safe? And practice. And if anyone is interested in doing this, I highly encourage them to get some professional free dive or mermaid training through Patty. So that's kind of how I do the quick overview breakdown of how I know what to do.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of practice.
So then, but also your passion, as you said, is environmental activism, environmental conservation, and teaching, especially talking to kids about it. And so how does, sometimes it's purely entertainment, but as much like you said, your favorite is when you can actually talk to the kids. And so what does that look like when you're in character, but talking about more than your buddy Flounder?
Yes. Yeah. So in the aquarium, I can't see or hear anything. So I write the script and then we just start the show. And we just have a very good rapport and trust on how the timing of the show works. But I'm not the one talking to the kids, right? I'm under the water. So
when kids go to like Discovery World, there's an audio playing while I didn't realize that. Okay.
Well, I have a team of about 5 people that are there doing the show with me. You are seeing Echo perform and then hearing an aquarist do the script. So I write the script and work with the aquarist to promote whatever we're promoting that month. Sometimes it's microplastic. Sometimes it's like water access. I think that's what it was last month. Stuff like that. Freshwater topics. And then they will go through the script with the kids. So there's like games that we play, but yeah, you're listening to someone talk through the show and play games with you and kind of teach you about whatever Echo is teaching you. But I'm just kind of trusting them that we're on the same part on the script based on what we've practiced and everything like that. So you're definitely still learning. It's definitely a show and she does an amazing job. Usually who I work with is Alexis at Discovery World. Shout out Alexis. You're phenomenal. And we put on a good show, but not always am I under the surface. Like you said, sometimes I am Echo above the surface, and then I teach a story about microplastic pollution from the character of Echo verbally to the kids as well.
So then also in your real life, this is also part of you write curriculum. This is also part of what you want to be doing beyond just your mermaid life, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. So I am going to school as a master's student right now at the School of Freshwater Sciences at UW-Milwaukee. I'll be graduating in December, and I study ichthyology, limnology, and hydrology, everything to do with freshwater sciences. And I hope to kind of give myself a scientific base to the science communication base that I already had with my degree in journalism from Madison. So I worked as a science communicator for the DNR for a while, as well as some other magazines and things like that. And I just realized I wanted to be the scientist. And I also realized that I was kind of lacking the scientific education that I needed in order to truly teach kids about how they can be aquatic stewards. So that's why I decided to enroll in the school at Freshwater Sciences. And it's so exciting. I love it. I love my classes. I'm learning so much. It's also really hard, but
the barrier to entry I always think, I was like, what do I go back to school? And it's like, God, that sounds really hard to go back to studying and taking tests and writing papers. papers and being like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
But yeah. So what is the bigger, like, is the goal, at least for now, because obviously it changes, to continue to blend it all together and do
yes
all everything you're learning in your master's program right now with mermaiding and just keep growing it as edutainment?
Yes, my goal is to bring the shows that I'm doing in the aquatic conservation curriculum that I write to kids who don't have access to a ticketed event. I want to build a tank and have a traveling mermaid tank show around the Midwest that will come to schools that maybe are in lower income or less affluent areas and do the show for them for free. Right now, we have a monetary barrier to that. The tank is $10,000. So if anyone believes in this cause, you know, to donate,
get
let
that
me
GoFundMe
know.
Up.
Yeah, I know, right? So that's my next step. Yeah, it's a traveling tank show for sure.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, well, in the minute that we have left, where can people see your next show?
All right, July 15th, Discovery World shows at 11 and 12:30. It is going to be our biggest production yet. We are doing a full-on underwater play. No one has ever done it before. So come see us. Come have a fun time with Echo.
Oh, that's so I don't think I can go to Discovery World without a child, so I'm going to have to take my niece.
Yes,
I think
you can.
You can? Okay.
You can.
Yes, you can. Many adults come see
Great.
My shows.
I can't
love
wait
it.
To see it. All right, yeah. Mermaid Echo, thank you so much for telling us about everything you do. Definitely go find at Mermaid Echo on social media. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we're going to take one more break and then wrap up the show. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. Did you have a theme for today's music, Greg? Or did you just pick things as you came to you?
I looked at the overview of today's schedule and I was just like, what are the songs that really fit these themes? And I'm really happy that Mermaid Echo had never heard that song before. Because I was like literally looking, and then there was another one that was by the Florence and the Machine. I was looking through the lyrics. I'm like, nope, cannot play that song.
Oh, why?
Has some questionable lyrics.
Mm.
But you know, just a little too over the top for.
Wait, which Florence and the Machine song is about a mermaid?
I don't remember. I know.
Go look.
Yeah.
One of the best concerts. I've seen her twice.
Really?
She's unbelievable.
Oh, very good. Love it.
I still can't answer this question. And I think they went to the same conservatory.
Yeah.
But when you think of Florence Henderson, right?
Yeah.
Is that her last name?
No, that's your thing.
That's
the mom from Brady Bunch.
What's Florence's last name?
I thought it was Machine.
It's not Machine. I'm totally blanking. I'm going to blame the baby. She went to the same conservatory as Adele.
Welch.
Thank you. And I've always wondered, because they have such different voices. Like, how would you ever ask who is a better singer of those two, because they both have such I've seen both of them, those women, in concert, and they are two artists that sound better in person than on the album. Yeah.
They're powerhouses.
Powerhouses, but very, very different voices. And now I'm curious of what her mermaid song
Could you imagine a duet between them, like just a cappella duet of any song they have?
And it'd be interesting to see if their voices complement each other, though.
Yeah.
Because I saw a duet, I saw a couple different duets with Kelly Clarkson and Pink.
Yeah.
Which was incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
Pink was on Kelly Clarkson's show, and they just kind of sang a cappella some of Pink's songs.
Yeah.
And it was so good. And so I feel like those voices complement each other, but it'd be interesting to see with the different styles if I'm sure they would make it work. They're like two of the best artists in the world.
This is the world of haters we live in too, by the way. I was watching something, it was a clip of Pink doing her performance. Now, anyone listening out there who doesn't know what Pink does in her live concerts, she basically does acrobatics. She does like Cirque du Soleil, mm-hmm. like huge.
Have you been to a Pink concert?
I've never been to one. I've seen one live,
like her documentary or whatever.
I mean, you are getting a Las Vegas show coming to your town, essentially. And we were sitting there and watching, and someone from the back just was like, oh yeah, that's what she has to do because she doesn't have any talent. I'm like,
oh,
you are, first of all, if Pink just sat on a chair and sang with a guitar, people would sell out arenas for her. The fact that she's adding in a layer of entertainment that you don't get with any other concert, and I'm sorry, you don't think either of those things are talents? What's wrong with people,
but
Kristen?
It's also, to me, because it's one thing when it comes to breaking into the entertainment business that some people, dumb luck, they get a break. But if you don't have talent, you do not last.
No.
Like, no. It just, there is no longevity for people who don't have the work ethic, don't have the talent, and also don't have the luck, right?
Yeah.
But this woman has been in the pop culture scene since I was in middle school.
So, like, the 90s?
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, I think her first kind of big single was, like, late
90s. Yeah.
And she's still selling out tours all over the world.
In arenas.
I'm pretty sure she has a little bit of talent.
No talent whatsoever. Sorry, Kristen. Just a talentless hack. That, you know, that old Sally Pink.
Don't quit the acrobats.
Yeah. Old Florence Henderson ain't got nothing on Pink.
All right. Well, I'm trying to think. What I feel like, did any news break while we were on air?
The Supreme Court voted, I think it was 5-4 or 6-3. I think it was 6-3 against, I believe it was North Carolina and their maps.
What? Really?
Yeah, that just came over that was while we were, let's see here.
What breaking news did we miss while we were talking to a mermaid? How often do you get to say that?
Supreme Court rules against North Carolina Republicans over election law theory.
Oh, so that was Harper versus Moore.
Yeah.
That is really good.
Yeah.
So that was, yes, that is actually a really, really good outcome because I know going into the hearings last fall, every legal scholar, you know, including we had Jim Santel from Morning Cannolis, which you can hear on Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Network, former attorney, U.S. attorney. He came on the show to explain, like, this would be really, really bad. This would be really, really bad. And so the fact that, and it seemed like when the hearings happened that there was a fair amount of pushback, even from some of the conservative justices. But it's good to hear that they did rule in that the state court didn't overstep their authority.
I'm still kind of mad at the Supreme Court. I'm still kind of mad at them. They're not invited to Thanksgiving this year. Sorry.
I feel like there was a different, I saw during on Twitter, I think there was also a case that they decided with Norfolk Southern. So I know on Friday this week, we are going to have a Supreme Court legal expert from UW-Madison.
Really?
Join us. To talk about, because this is basically the week. So all of the we're holding our breath on affirmative action, student loans, the bigger cases, Harper versus Moore, that have we heard, you know, the hearings happened late last year, and now this is the last week that they can come down with their rulings. So by the end of this week, there should be a fair amount to talk about as far as what does it all mean?
What does it all mean?
And so I will have to read more before I start talking out of the side of my mouth.
I want to be on that
know.
Show so bad.
On Friday?
Yeah, I probably won't be here because, you know.
Because you have other jobs you have to attend to?
Because I'm such a dork.
How do you feel about day two?
Oh, you know what? Honestly, I'm feeling good. You've made it very easy. All the help between, shout out to Calvin, one of our other producers who's helped me a lot here during my training. Shout out, of course, to Jane Matinere. Shout out to Kristen Bry and everyone here at Civic Media. Seriously, it's been a delight to do this, and I'm happy to be a part of the team, and it is my pleasure to be here, and I like pushing the buttons and being on the old ones and twos.
The ones and twos. Add this to what is all the rundown of different jobs you've had? You've been a barber. You've now been a radio producer.
Yep. Brewery tour guide, stand-up comedian, comedy club owner, paperboy. There's just too many to put out there, Fred.
That's a pretty wide variety, even just with those six. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, that will about do it for us today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Greg will be here. Jane will probably be here.
Yeah, we'll all be.
But if not, you'll be back on the board.
Friends
doing a
together.
Great job. Thank you for texting. Thank you for calling. Thank you to our guests. Thank you for being part of the show. We'll be back tomorrow. This is As Goes Wisconsin.